You're listening to Wheelationships.
Again, you have the handout on your table. This morning we're talking about, hello, my name is Dumb. We'll get to why that's the title in a little bit. Saw this cartoon, and this may be where you're coming from in coming to this class. You hear this and you go, smart people, dumb choices. I know them. And you may be here. There's some at the house self-help and others at the fixing others aisle. We're trying to go more here with the God help rather than trying to fix others, but there you are. The verse that we kind of started off with last week from Proverbs 32, it's on your handout. I am too stupid to be human and I lack common sense. The idea is we have knowledge, but the knowledge can fail to inform us and fail to activate us in the proper way. Not that we don't know what we should know, it's that we know what we should know and we don't do what we should do. That's the whole idea of making the smart people dumb choices. So we don't do the right things, or we don't do the best thing, or we don't do the smartest thing. Sometimes it's not a matter of right and wrong. Sometimes it's a matter of just best and not so good, or smart and dumb. Here's some examples from found this week from California. California woman facing nearly 5 years in prison for forging drug prescriptions showed up for sentencing with a phony doctor's note seeking a delay in the proceedings. Of course, the prosecutor called to verify, and it was a forgery, and so she got in more trouble. Didn't help her case at all. You may have seen this one from Spain. Jose Carlos Serna was arrested on kidnapping charges last October. While in jail, court officials received a fax from a regional court ordering his release. Officials released him, except the fax was from his wife. She kind of forged the document, and they just let him go. So he was arrested 3 days later. In December, the local officials again received a fax from a regional court ordering his release, but this time they try to call to verify with the regional court, but no one answers. But they get a phone call from a regional court official saying, yes, that's a real fax. You can release him. So they release him again from his wife again. And they just caught him a week ago. So. In Spain, yeah. Spain. Madrid. Basically, the problem is all in our head. And I don't mean that from a, you know, sit down with your therapist and think it through. Whether it's psychological or mental or spiritual or emotional, it's all in your head. I mean, it's up here. We know it, but we don't do it. And it's all driven out of, you know, we say, because some things are heart issues. Well, really heart. Okay, it's back to here. Okay, back to the way we're thinking, the way what we're doing. So there are three factors that are going to work together to help produce smart or dumb choices. Three factors in making what I would call a dumb cocktail. Sometimes we feel like we've been sipping the dumb cocktail because we're doing dumb things. So these three things kind of factor into it. First is the way we think. The way we think. Pastor talks about this quite a bit. Got to change the way you think. Our minds have amazing abilities. And I'm not talking about amazing minds. I'm talking about our minds. No. Normal, regular minds. We have amazing abilities. You have just astounding abilities. And we can do calculations. Maybe you've seen this. Here's an example. Read this. You seen that? Yeah. Everybody got it? Read it pretty good? Okay? Pretty much got it? Actually, yeah. Doesn't matter. You know what it is. It doesn't matter. You're going, is that actually on the first line? Yeah, it is. Well, it's not. It doesn't have the right letters. It doesn't matter. You know what it is. Okay? All right? So here's the thing. And this overstates it just a little bit because it wasn't a Cambridge University study. Okay, that part's not quite accurate. Okay, it was a study, but it wasn't by Cambridge. And it's not actually just switching a matter of the first and last letters. It does depend on the particular type of word that you use. So these particular words you could do it with. Some words you couldn't. Okay, you mix them up and you wouldn't know what it was. But it does point out the fact that our minds are doing this processing that, you know, there are gaps here. There are things that aren't right. And we still know what the intent is. And that's because our brains are filling in the gaps. They are doing that processing without having all the information. Okay? They're making the right conclusion even though they don't have all the knowledge. We're able to fill in missing information. There's a word for that. That we sometimes use that word in a negative way. I'll say the word is assume. Our minds are assuming the right information even though we don't have the right information. Saw this on Twitter. I mentioned it at a staff meeting this week. Remember what happens when you assume. You save yourself a lot of time. You save yourself a whole bunch of time when you assume. Okay, we know the other one. It's a bad thing to assume because, you know, things you do. But when you assume, you save yourself a lot of time on the good side of things. There are things you don't have to know everything to make the right choice. It's not a matter of what you know and what you don't know sometimes. However, on the negative side, we know that this can produce problems when we don't know everything. And we can assume information we don't really have. We do that sometimes in gossip. You know, we assume something, we tell somebody, we're completely wrong, we're out in left field, we haven't talked to the person firsthand at all, and off we go. We can also have some holes or blind spots in our thinking. Some areas that we just don't see at all. We think we do, we don't. Much like when you're in a car, you have these blind spots. Now, we're going to use a couple of passages from the book of Esther, mostly centered on the guy Haman, who is a very, very, very rich man in the kingdom of King Xerxes. He was so rich. He offered Xerxes, he got angry at Mordecai. And if you remember the story in the book of Esther, he got angry at Mordecai because Mordecai wasn't acting like Haman wanted him to. And Haman offered Xerxes over 300 tons of silver as payment to do what Haman wanted him to do. Chump change. Okay. It was. It was just like, whatever. I'll give you this. And that's he was one of the nobles. He was one of the important rich guys. So he was one of the elite. Did I mention he was rich? He was rich. And he makes a very dumb choice. Now, he didn't get all this money simply because he was stupid. He obviously was a smart guy. But here in Esther 6:6, so Haman came in and the king said, "What should I do to honor a man who truly pleases me?" Haman thought to himself, "Whom would the king wish to honor more than me? I've already offered the guy over 300 tons of gold, silver." Not quite as much as gold. I mean, and so he makes this assumption. He fills in the blank, me. And he proceeds to talk to the king from that vantage point. Of course, the king wasn't talking about him. He was talking about Mordecai. And this ends up being a very, very dumb choice on Haman's part. So Haman had some gaps in what he thought. He had some blind spots. Mention the side mirror in your car. You know this? Objects in mirror are closer than they appear. Now, there's that warning on your mirror that you can't hardly see when you're looking at the mirror. Anyway, so there's that warning on your mirror so that your mind can fill in the gap and know, okay, what I'm looking at isn't quite the way it really is. And so it fills in that gap. But what your mirror doesn't do is it doesn't see the blind spots. So that assumption can only take you so far. And you know, if you're a good driver, that you have to turn and actually look and find what's in your blind spot quickly before you hit the person in front of you. So we compensate, but we know the mirrors won't show everything. So there's this, the way we think. Now, the second thing is the way we decide. You would think, saying, what's the difference? Well, so I know what I'm dealing with. What?
The one about the mirror. Which object is it? The one in the mirror or the object in the mirror?
The object that the mirror is reflecting.
Yeah. Well,
it's closer than it appears.
Okay.
We'll have some remedial time for you guys later. All right. So obviously the first thing is the way we think causes us problems. And the second one is the way we decide causes us problems. Sometimes we have the best information available, but we come to an illogical conclusion. We make an irrational choice. We look back and we say, why did I do that? It wasn't what you were thinking, it's how you decided. We make irrational choices, and we're gonna give a variety of illustrations later to demonstrate this and to give you clues on this, but it's all about making irrational decisions. Third element's a big one, the way we feel. Now, all three of these factors work together, kind of blend in the cocktail. But it's often the emotional part that leads us. Oftentimes, it's our emotions that we first feel, first recognize, first come play a part in this. I think one of the reasons that emotions so often lead us is that they tend to be the quickest. I mean, that particular emotion is like, bam, right there. You don't have to contemplate it. There's no contemplation. There's no thinking or deciding. It's just there. And so that tends to get there quicker, be a more immediate for us, more immediate resource for what we're going to do. And so we follow that. And the other two parts, the thinking and the deciding, sometimes will key off of what we feel. We let our feelings lead. I think James understood that. That's why he wrote this in James 1:19. Understand this, my dear brothers and sisters, you all must be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. Okay? In other words, be quick to get your information. Fill in the gaps. Make sure you're thinking and processing all of the things before you actually act and decide, before you follow those feelings, whatever they may be. In this case, it's anger. Be slow to get angry because you know how quickly that can happen. So we're going to look at the different emotions and decisions and thoughts that affect our choices. And we're going to start with the 10 emotions that can lead to dumb choices. Because emotions lead so much, we're going to kind of use the emotional element and tie the other parts of the cocktail into this. Now, we're not going to do all 10 today. In fact, we're going to do all one today. Won't always stick with one. Sometimes it'll be more than one on a Sunday. But we're going to start with this one. No in particular order. Though for me, I think we start off with number one by a landslide. Let's start with Esther. This story we've been talking about, Esther 3. Sometime later, King Xerxes promoted Haman, son of that guy, the Agagite, over all the other nobles, making him the most powerful official in the empire. All the king's officials would bow down before Haman to show him respect whenever he passed by, for so the king had commanded. But Mordecai refused to bow down or show him respect. Then the palace officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why are you disobeying the king's command?" They spoke to him day after day, but he still refused to comply with the order. So they spoke to Haman about this to see if he would tolerate Mordecai's conduct, since Mordecai had told them he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not bow down or show him respect, he was filled with rage. He had learned of Mordecai's nationality, so he decided it was not enough to lay hands on Mordecai alone. Instead, he looked for a way to destroy all the Jews throughout the entire empire of Xerxes. Now, Haman was a smart guy who's making some dumb choices. There were a couple of emotions at work here that will be at work to help him make his dumb choice. But we'll start with what for me is the most obvious one, and like I said, number one by a landslide, anger. Anger. Let me get the necessary disclaimers out of the way first. Anger is not always bad. We know it's not always bad. Anger is just an emotion. It's a tool that God gives us to use. Anger has good uses. Old Testament, Jonathan got angry with his dad, King Saul, when Saul went after David, went after his friend. Jonathan got angry with him, and he had a right to be. Paul got angry with the high priest when he was hit. God gets angry. Multiple references of God getting angry. Problem is when we let our anger lead us into dumb choices, like Haman did. Ecclesiastes 7:9 says, "Control your temper, for anger labels you a fool." And you might as well just stick the name tag on there. Hi, I'm dumb. That's why the title, yeah. Is there anyone here who has not been in this position where you had to put that thing on and say, "Oh, I'm dumb," okay? I think we all, you know, you have those moments where you just, anger comes and you follow it, and later on you go, "Wow, you are ahead." Proverbs 16:32, "Better to be patient than powerful. Better to have self-control than to conquer a city." Conquer your anger is better than conquering a city. Now, each of these emotions are very broad. And we could probably do, in fact, this particular topic, anger, Trudy and I have talked for a while about, I really, really want to do a teaching arc on just anger. Because it's so destructive in relationships. It can be so hard to deal with in relationships. And so it's a very broad subject, but we're not going to go into the breadth of it. We're going to try to keep it kind of narrow. And hopefully your minds are smart enough you can fill in the gaps. So I think we understand how anger can drive us to bad choices. I'd say my biggest regrets in relationships, when I think of times in relationships where, you know, I wish I could take back certain instances, probably I think almost every one are anger related. Where I did something following anger and, man, I can't take that back. I can apologize. I can go through the steps we talked about in apology and restoration. But, man, there's still that thing of, I wish I hadn't done that. So, you know, whether it's anger or frustration or irritation. So I just want to mention a couple of things that can help us to make some smarter choices when anger is involved. One author I read talked about how she and her husband had an electric blanket with dual controls. Any of you ever have one of those? Okay. Well, if anybody ever have an electric blanket with dual controls, you probably don't use it down here. How many use it down here? Okay. Anyway, I really don't want to know more than that. But so if you have an electric blanket with dual controls, the reason you have that is because each of you likes a different temperature. And if you have an electric blanket with dual controls, then you've probably done exactly what the author's done at some point, where you wake up in the middle of the night and it's like, oh, it's a little hot, so you turn your blanket down. Oh, it's a little hot, turn the blanket down. It's still hot, I'm burning up, turn the blanket down. You wake up in the morning, you find out that your spouse has been had your control, and you had their control. This is what happened to this author. She's like, oh, I'm burning up. She's, ugh. And he goes, that's funny. I was freezing, and I kept turning it up, and I just got colder, you know. And you wake up, and they found out they had each other's control. Now, it led them to an insignificant but dumb choice. They kept fiddling with the control, thinking it was going to change something. This leads us to the first thing that we can do to make a smarter choice. We can make a smarter choice by seeing the big picture. They didn't see the big picture. All they saw was, my temperature's wrong, I'm going to work with this control. If they'd seen the big picture that there's another control out there that I don't have, then that would help them. Many times, what's going to happen is our anger narrows our focus. When anger hits, our focus just narrows. It's like, I mean, you can see it sometimes on people where everything gets drawn in, and it's like, you know, the lasers of death are shooting from my eyes, and I want to just, you know. Yeah, you see what you're angry at. And it causes us to make two assumptions, one of two assumptions. It makes us one of two assumptions. Either you're stupid or you're immoral. Okay, if you're not being stupid, then you're just wrong. Usually those are one of the two assumptions, right? I mean, you're being dumb. Why are you being dumb? Okay, you're not being dumb. You're just doing that to irritate me. You're no good. Anger doesn't usually cause us to increase our options and open up our options. It causes us to narrow them down to usually one of those two. Proverbs 14:29, people with understanding control their anger. A hot temper shows great foolishness. Why? Because we don't see the big picture. Anger usually doesn't encourage us to see the big picture. It encourages us to see a very narrow window. Anyone familiar, and some of you are educators, so you very well might be, anyone familiar with the book Flatland, or the story Flatland? Anybody heard that one? Okay. It's over 125 years old, written by a guy by the name of Edwin.
They had books back then?
Yeah. It's been used for both good and bad, but most commonly it's used for math and science. It's written by Edwin Abbott Abbott. I had to say that because I just love that name. Edwin Abbott, that's really his name. His middle name is Abbott. His last name is Abbott. I don't know why. That was a dumb choice by his parents. Anyway, it's the story of a square. Get this. It's the story of a square that lives in a two-dimensional world. Length and width. Okay, imagine if you lived in a two-dimensional world, everything would be like on a plane. You wouldn't have any up or down. You just have side and, you know, this way. And so everything that you would see would just be on this plane. And everything would look kind of like a line. And the only way you would know what something was by kind of going around it and seeing how many sides it had. So in the squares world, there would be squares and there were triangles and then there were circles, because the circles had so many sides they looked like a circle. Those were the priests of the world. So the square one night was visited, or in a dream, he had a dream that he went to a one-dimensional world. And he went to this one-dimensional world and tried to explain to the one-dimensional dots there, because everything was just one-dimensional, it was a dot. They had no width, you know, it was just a dot. And he tried to explain to the dots how he came from a two-dimensional world, and, you know, it was a horrible dream, it was a nightmare, because they, you know, they wanted to roast him at the stake. Dot steak, I guess. I don't know. So, and, you know, he woke up, that was terrible. And then the square was visited by a sphere from a three-dimensional world. And the three-dimensional sphere tried to explain to him how there was actually another dimension to his world. Now, this is all kind of weird and strange to you, but you think about it. If you did live in a two-dimensional world and somebody from the three-dimensional world came and tried to explain this to you, you go, what? I don't understand, because you don't have any reference point for another dimension. I thought this was all really interesting because we actually do have another dimension other than these three dimensions. We have the spiritual dimension that sometimes we try to explain to people and they don't quite get it because they don't see it. Anyway, the point of the story is that there are other dimensions, so to speak, in our world that we don't always grasp because we only have our frame of reference. We don't see the big picture because we only see what we see. And other things are going on, and there are other influences, and sometimes when something happens and we get, and anger comes because our focus narrows down, we forget about that there's an up and a down and a left and a right. We just see the point in front of us. And the biggest component to increase your big picture view, and by the way, I just had a little drawing there. You see two dimensions, and you see it as a line, and then you see a sphere, which is a totally different thing. I had some drawing fun. Anyway, the biggest components for this are imagination and empathy. If you want to increase your big picture view, you're going to have to use some imagination and empathy. You're going to have to use imagination because you don't live there. You see what you see, and what you don't see is kind of, you're going to have to use some imagination for that, and you're also going to have to use empathy, which is kind of strange since we just talked about empathy a few weeks ago for a couple of weeks. Haman, in this story, had neither imagination nor empathy. He couldn't imagine that Mordecai would have any valid reason for disrespecting him like this. In fact, he probably, if he thought about it, if you look back at the story, his friends, Mordecai's friends, went to Haman every day and said, "You're disobeying, why don't you do this?" And he wouldn't answer them. And if he went so far as to say, "Well, I can imagine maybe he didn't know," he couldn't use imagination any farther to give any possible reason why. And so couldn't do it. He also didn't know what it would be like for Mordecai as a Jew and what that influence that may have on his behavior. So biggest components here are imagination and empathy. We are least likely, and I think we said this a few weeks ago, we are least likely to be empathetic when we're angry. When you're angry, that's the time when you're least likely to be empathetic. Because not only do we see less of the other person's perspective, our motivation for seeing their perspective usually decreases. I don't want to know why. don't tell me why. You know, I don't want to hear it. You just So we have to stop and say, okay, I need to go a little big picture here. A little imagination, a little empathy. Another thing we can do is make the other world visible. Make the other world visible. And by that, I mean, if you were coming at it from a business standpoint, sometimes you need to write it down, you know, chart it out, see the diagram of the big picture. If you're trying to get a big picture view, sometimes you have to write down all of the elements. In a relationship, that can be difficult because some of the elements aren't write-downable. It's hard to diagram them. We may not be able to draw it. But maybe we can think long enough and contemplate long enough, maybe even make a list of what in this other world should I maybe see that I'm not seeing. Another thing we can try is consider the extended relationships. You encounter a grumpy clerk, and they're very rude to you. And perhaps, maybe, the other world is the manager who's on her case. You know, consider those other relationships. What else may be going on here with this clerk? Maybe there's a sick kid at home, or maybe a parent's dying, or I don't know, you know. Being rude to the clerk is not necessarily going to help. And even complaining to the manager may not do what you think it's going to do. It may be kind of a system problem with this person, part of a larger kind of system involved. or the conversation might not, you know, think of it in a home situation. The conversation, the disagreement you're having may not be just something that your spouse needs to be involved in. Maybe there's some other person that this is about as well, and the three of you need to kind of, you know, maybe it's an in-law or a child or a parent that you all need to sit down together, and this is a system problem. We are a body, it says about the church, and sometimes it's a system problem. Ask, when did that change? I already went there, didn't I? Okay, and you got this one too. Consider unintended consequences. Did I not have that last point? Okay. Oops. My fault. Ask, when did that change? When did that change? Our focus on one dimension can narrow our focus so much on a particular, wow, I got to hurry, on a particular time we're thinking about now that we may need to stop and think about, this may be a longer lasting issue that we haven't really thought about. You know, when did that change? When did this really, it didn't really happen now. Maybe it started some time ago and you got to go back there and think about when it actually changed. It may be affecting us now, but maybe the real cause happened a long time ago. And consider unintended consequences. Spiritually, relationally, there are many long-term consequences of our short-sighted actions. Ask yourself, what are the possible outcomes? If I do what my anger is telling me to do, what are the possible outcomes? And are there any possible outcomes that might actually be the opposite of what I hope to accomplish if I follow my anger here? See, one of the biggest difficulties is that this involves thinking abstractly. It involves something that we're kind of all relatively new at. You know, we've only been doing it since we've been late teenage adults. Even if you're older now, it really hasn't been that long. Because we haven't been doing this our whole life, thinking abstractly like this, with not just concrete ideas, but with abstractions of other things going on, other things coming into play. Because the quickest and easiest way to deal with things is to deal with the concrete. You did this, this happened, I'm angry. To deal with the abstractions of the different layers of what may be going on, that's a little more difficult. That takes a little more mature, involved view. A lot of times anger talks to us and says, I don't want to be mature, I want this solved now. So we want to deal with the concrete. Imagine you're talking to first graders. And you're reading to them the story of the three little pigs. You know the story of three little pigs. And you ask them, what is this about? What is this story about? What are the first graders going to tell you? It's about pigs. It's about a wolf blowing down the house. Okay. Now, if I ask you as an adult, what is that about? You may say the same thing, but if I say, no, what is that story really about? Most of you would be able to think about it and go, well, there's some abstract elements there. There's themes of hard work and good and evil and what else? I don't know. Blowhards. Yeah, laziness and all that kind of thing. So there's some abstract, non-concrete elements in there. And that's what a lot of this big picture kind of thing is dealing with. So the older we get, we have to deal with those things. I'd love to go on and finish this, but we're out of time. So I hope to see you next week. Have a good week. No, I can't. I got too much. You'll have to find out next week. It's a good one, too.